I'm so tired of these late night talks, saying things that we don't mean, that we regret in the morning. Yeah, I just wish we could open up, be a little more honest. This is getting exhausting. Yeah, can't do one more night of having to sleep on the sofa. I just wanna figure it out now before it's over. I don't wanna pack my things and be ready to let you go. To let you go. But maybe it's too late to figure it out, to make it through. Maybe it can't wait, maybe it's time, maybe we're doomed. I try to pull you closer, cause I don't wanna go. Yeah, but maybe it's too late. The idea is not to live forever, but to create something that will. Andy Warhol. This episode features Eric Reyes, aka Big Mood Coach, who is a mental health and sobriety advocate. Eric joined this episode to talk about his own personal journey through both mental health and sobriety. I loved his transparency, so stay tuned. I think you'll like it too. Let's talk about the evolution of Eric. And I know that that's still working itself out, right? I've heard you talk about the dance you have, like the spirituality and all of these different things. And I know that you hold space for those who don't have the capacity to do it for themselves yet. You've become this advocate, you know, while you're working personally through your stuff. And it's just happened to kind of move over to the professional. But how did you really get here? Like, Big Mood Coach, the person that we see with these incredible inspirational videos, how did we get here?
Yeah. So I'm a recovering heroin addict. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, been diagnosed with bipolar disorder since I was 15. So I've done a lot of suffering, you know, and there was a lot of pain and chaos and violence and just destruction in my past. And when I was 23, I got sober, and 12-step introduced me to personal development, because that's what 12-step is. It's you know, personal development. It's growing and working on yourself and taking a look at yourself. So I started that at 23. And I started, you know, understanding and being open to a spiritual life, because 12-step is not a religious program. A lot of people have that issue. But it allows you to find a God of your own understanding. And I've been able to build a relationship with that God. And so it was after 12-step, it went into fitness and bodybuilding. And what bodybuilding taught me was if you work out every day, mm-hmm. and if you eat right, you change. And that's personal development. And as my fitness career grew, I did more and more work on myself, more and more therapy. I've been in therapy since I was 15, by necessity. Yeah. But I went even deeper, you know, as I got sober and I started unpeeling layers, and I continued the recovery journey and started unpeeling layers, and, you know, struggled with sex addiction, started unpeeling layers, and just have continued to just unravel. Then, you know, I do meditation workshops. I do other personal development workshops. I do transformational work. I keep unraveling. Yeah. And, you know, this is who I am today, and who knows where I'll be next year. I continue the work. It's perpetual growth.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's why this podcast and everything that I do is called Ever Evolving, because that's truly like the mission statement of my life as well. Like, I ain't got it all together. And I tell people all the time, like, even when we have these conversations, it doesn't come from a place of perfection. It definitely is progression. Like, every day, like you said, we're chipping away at it, pulling back those layers and just trying to navigate through, you know, for me, it's been a lot of, like you said, childhood, not even just trauma. It's definitely some trauma there. Okay. But even just mindsets and growing up in religion, and having to find my own way. And like you said, finding the God of my own understanding and what that means to me. And that has been, it's been a lot to reprogram and reset those things and tear down certain things that are just not accurate, not correct, and don't work for me.
And so it's like you said, it's every day. It's every day. Something that I saw on one of your pages is getting out of your stuck. And yeah. I was really curious about what that means.
Yeah, that means a lot of things. Everyone's been stuck, you know, we've been frozen in time, whether it be depression, whether it be stuck in a relationship, whether it be stuck in a mindset. There's just so many forms of it. And I use the word suffering a lot. And when we think of the word suffering, we think of, you know, like pain or losing an arm, but suffering can be subtle. And in Buddhist mm-hmm. principles, suffering can be the subtle feeling of lacking that we feel. And so stuck, when I refer to stuck, I talk about people being stuck in their quote unquote suffering, whatever that may be. And how do you get unstuck? Yeah. And what does that look like? And I think getting unstuck is a challenge, but there's work to do and it's a grind. Mm-hmm. But I think all of us have been stuck at some point in our lives, whether my brother, you know, was ADA in New York City, and he was stuck. He was stuck in that job. That was his suffering. That was his cross to bear. My suffering was deep depression. My stuck was I couldn't leave my house for a year and a half in 2015 into 2016. So that was my stuck. It's different for everybody, but it's the next indicated steps. It's taking the next indicated steps. And sometimes the movement is so slow, it feels like you're running in place.
Yeah.
But you just keep on pushing, keep on moving and changing behaviors. You know, I put a book out, is a workbook out years ago, and it's just, you know, daily steps, you know, evening steps and morning and evening steps that you can take to shift that subconscious programming. There's just baby steps to make that'll get you unstuck. It'll get you out of that default setting that those subconscious programmings that we've covered ourselves with, whether it be through culture or professional life or just, you know, our mental health, which is something that people aren't choosing. Stuck looks different for everyone.
Yeah. I love that you say that people aren't choosing. Is it always that they aren't choosing or they just don't know, especially like, I guess for Black culture and for men, I have that's a, like a question that I have, because when I have these conversations with people around me, like people that I meet or in the past people that I've dated, it's like, it goes over their head. They don't even know what I'm talking about when I, you know, challenge them or question them about the state of their mental health.
Yeah. So yeah. What was the question?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No. I said some people aren't prepared to take a look at it. And sometimes that's cultural, especially in the African-American community. We don't have the luxury mm-hmm. to take a look at, you know, how I'm feeling, right? You know, we got bills to pay, you know, jobs to work. We're trying to get home safely on a subconscious level, even if we're not making a decision, like we're subconsciously on a heightened state of awareness.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I'm in a lot of white spaces and it's like, am I being judged? Am I, what are they thinking of me? Sometimes we don't have the luxury to like think about my feelings, you know, especially Black men. There's a lot of pressure on a Black man and a Black woman. I think the Black woman has the most pressure.
You do.
I do.
I think that's a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
You know,
who
has it worse? Or
it's not even who has it worse.
The struggle being greater, you know?
But you know, Black men, we have our cross to bear. But Black women are the most underappreciated people on this planet.
Yeah.
And have had to hold us down through slavery and hold the men down through our entire history in this country, and with no thank you. With no thank you from the country, with no thank you from the men. And I know I don't always say thank you, but I thank my mom all the time because I've seen what she's done.
Yeah.
You know, all my dad had to do was really go to work and come home. My mom had to go to work, come home, travel, have her career, raise us, feed us, take us to the beach, entertain us, all of that effortlessly. Like an angel, you know. Thankless job.
Yeah. Listen, you're speaking the truth. Let's talk about, you know, choosing to, you know, take that accountability for, your healing. I always say, you know, maybe the trauma that was inflicted wasn't your fault. You know, sometimes it is. I've endured trauma that, you know, I didn't do it. You know, I was young and those things were, you know, taken from me. But there are times when, you know, it is self-inflicted. But whatever the thing is, I feel like you are responsible at the end of the day to really take accountability for that healing. And I really want to drive this point home for everybody, of course, but especially men, because I do see a lack of accountability, again, in everybody, but again, in the men in my life, I've seen that lack of accountability and just that wall of not like feeling like, no, I'm good. Like, I don't know if it's a pride thing. I don't know what it is. But talk about that, about the accountability of taking those next steps to be accountable for the healing that you really need.
I'm going to advocate for those guys. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying to uncover. For me, it took me until I was 25 to even understand that I was sexually abused.
Yeah.
I thought about it and didn't, you know, I couldn't comprehend and begin to unpack that. As a sex addict, my relationship to the opposite sex and preoccupation with women, it took a long time to even, you know, it's terrifying to take a look at that, you know, not being the father you wish you could be. You know, a lot of men who I think this is just theory, but a lot of men who leave their children, how much shame do they have around leaving their children that make them never go back?
Yeah.
That make them never able to face their children or, you know, face that they left. It's scary to unpack. It's scary to take a look at that stuff. So I think that's a lot of the hesitance, is it's terrifying and to take a look at yourself. I know for me, dealing with my mental health challenges, the place where I was most unsafe was my mind. And my shame and my guilt. But facing that, you know, head first was where I found the salvation. And that's where I believe that, you know, it takes a lot of courage and responsibility to face that. That's why I've learned radical responsibility through recovery, though.
Yeah.
You know, so many of those 12 steps that people talk about, you know, step 4, step 5, step 6, step 7, step 8, step 9, are all taking responsibility for yourself, which, for, you know, so for me, in order for me to stay sober, I have to take responsibility for myself. So me and my friends and the people I surround myself with, there's just this radical responsibility. So that's, I'm lucky to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to the previous point, I think a lot of Black men and women don't have the luxury. They don't have the luxury to, you know, even in the recovery spaces, whether it's men's circles, because I've been part of men's healing circles, men's therapy circles, you know, then 12 step, we're the minority in those groups.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we're not struggling. It's just that, you know, it's just not a luxury that we have, whether it be time or culture or whatever that stops us from being in those spaces. And that's what I'm hoping with my podcast and everything, is being like, yeah, I'm big, I'm 6'3", I'm Black, I'm loud, and I'm healing out loud in front of all of you, in front of your face, showing you that it's okay for you to do it too. And it doesn't make you any less manly.
Yes.
I'm as masculine as they come. You know, it doesn't make me any less manly to be soft. Sometimes, as a Mike Tyson quote, it took a lot of violence to get this soft. It took a lot of hurt to get this soft. It took a lot of, you know, so hopefully I can be a representation of that. For all men, and especially African-American men, like, hey, you know, face it, you know, and there is room for us in these spaces.
Yes.
There's room for us in these spaces.
You certainly are a representative of that. And again, I say thank you. I did learn that, you know, before, I would say the last 2 years, I've learned that there weren't really spaces for us to heal in the way that we need to through my teenage daughter, who attempted suicide and was in a behavioral health facility, right? And there was nobody even there that looked like her. There were no people that, you know, the people that worked there, they didn't look like her. And I remember looking around and being like, wow. And that started the work that I do to have these conversations, because I didn't get it, you know? It started, you know, my therapy journey. Because I just didn't get it. And so I want people to know, like, it's a real thing, and we acknowledge that. But I think that if we show up for ourselves and, like you said, just take that accountability and ask for help, even though it's terrifying, because it is. But you said, like, the most unsafe place was your mind. That was like, because I get it. And I've been there where my mind just literally was like a battlefield, like just a war zone. And so I'm so glad that you're here and that you're talking about this, because it's beautiful. I want to know from, I could say woman or man or just anybody, from a standpoint of seeing a man, especially a Black man, that we feel may need help. How do we go about loving them and helping them through it and helping with that process of healing their hearts?
Yeah, that's part of why I do the work that I do as an interventionist as well, is it, we call it loving interruption. That's what it is. It's loving interruption, you know, and how I would, you know, how would have a family approach that on their own. The letter writing, the typical intervention model of writing someone a letter and putting pen to paper. Not even typing a letter, but putting pen to paper, reading it and giving it to that person and love it, saying, I love you, but this is affecting us X, Y, and Z. This is how, and this is what we're seeing is happening. And this is the detriment it's having to the family, but we love you, but we love you. This is, it's a loving nudge to say, hey, take a look at this. Also doing the work that I do, I know that it doesn't always work. But that's why I work with people for a long period of time. Not just doing intervention, I'm in and I'm out. If the intervention doesn't work, we have a road to get to travel, to get that person the help that they need. But, to the person who's trying to ask their loved one for help, write a letter and lovingly interrupt them and say, this is what I'm seeing. This is how I'm feeling. And this is ultimately how I feel about you and why I'm telling you this. It's not an attack. And I feel like so many times people think an intervention is an attack.
Right.
And really the word, we need to popularize the word loving interruption. And you can use that in any, when your friend is complaining about a relationship that is not working, you've heard it 1,000 times, say, hey, let me lovingly interrupt you right now. Let me stop you right there. And let me tell you, show you what I'm seeing. And this is how I'm seeing it's affecting you. And set boundaries. This is how I see it. This is how it's affecting me. And we can't go further with this effect, you know, with what you're experiencing, and this is how it's affecting the people around you, you know. But it's coming from a place of love and compassion, understanding. You know, people with mental health challenges and afflictions, they're sick people, and in a lot of times in recovery, we talk about someone who's an alcoholic or someone who is bipolar and or schizophrenic or depressed and self-harming. They're a sick person. Would you treat someone with cancer with the same, like, you know, with the same, would we disregard them? No, we would love on them. We'd bring flowers to their bed.
Be kind.
You know, we'd be kind. Yeah. We'd bring them stuffed animals and we'd visit them every day. Yeah. That's how we should treat the alcoholic. That's how we should treat the addict or the someone struggling with mental health. They're sick people. They're not bad people. Yeah. And as frustrating as it is to see someone who is destructive, even if they're traumatizing the family, they're in a cycle of sickness. And it seems we have to rise above and to save their life or create boundaries and separate ourselves, which that's loving too. They don't know it. Sometimes the best thing you could do to love someone is to separate yourself from them. And eventually, if they do find their own healing, they'll understand why and they'll thank you for it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I love that. I'm taking that. I'm lovingly interrupting you. It's amazing because sometimes you don't have the words. And I've been in those spaces where I was like, I love you, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get this message across. I'm just going to leave. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Like, that's been my, like, I'm out because I just didn't know what to do. But that helps me. And I hope that helps the listeners and those that are watching. Let the people know how they can stay connected with you to continue to get this amazing information and advice about this journey you're on.
Oh, how they can find me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everywhere is the same. It's Eric_BigMoodCoach on Instagram. BigMoodCoach.com is where you can find everything that I do. But I'm predominantly on Instagram. I post every day. My stories are wild. I post like ridiculous things on my story. So if you want to be entertained in a dark manner, you could check out my story. But if you want to learn something and connect with me, and I say that on my podcast, we want to connect with you. And we were doing Care Bear, shooting love out of our hearts. But yeah, you can listen to the podcast, Hearts Over Everything. We've been doing that for 3 years and 160 episodes up. So if you want to hear the same healing message week in and week out, we're just getting better out loud. We're just healing out loud. So check it out.
I love that. You are such a beautiful soul. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I also will have resources that may be helpful to family members and men who want to reach out for help, especially Black men. But until next time, you are listening to and watching the Ever Evolving Podcast.